At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at ikea-usa.com/circular. Visit ikea-usa.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
This podcast is part of the C-Suite Radio Network, turning the volume up on business.
Welcome to the Business Power Hour, hosted by Deb Creer. Join us as Deb talks with her guests, experts in their fields, as they share real-life stories and techniques to power up your business.
Good morning, good morning. I am Deb Creer, and I am passionate about giving professionals the tools that they need to make themselves and their businesses as successful as possible. And today we're going to have a great discussion about how to truly make your business successful starting from the ground up. And you'll see what I mean about that when we really get into this discussion, because it's going to be fascinating. So please join me in welcoming Tabitha Laser to our program today. Welcome, Tabitha.
Thank you, Deb. I'm excited to be here.
Great. Well, let me tell people just a little bit more about you. So Tabitha Laser is a multifaceted professional with over 25 years of leadership experience, including government agencies and Fortune 500 companies like BP, 3M, and General Mills. Her experience and education have fueled her passion to help shape the next generation of leaders, especially millennials, to avoid the pitfalls of their predecessors and lead beyond best. Tabitha is the author of Organization Culture Killers. This is the first in a series of leadership books she calls The Deadly Practices. Please join me in welcoming executive coach, speaker, and author of Organization Killers, Deadly Expectations Number One, How to Build Cultures of Success. So welcome, Tabitha.
Thank you.
Well, let's take a little bit of a step back and find out how you got to where you are today. How did you decide this was your passion?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. I for a long time have been in more of an EHS, environmental health and safety,
okay,
field. And that really started because my dad almost died in front of me when I was
dear.
Three. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He tried to light a barbecue pit with gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't go so well.
Oh, boy, and that's one of those guy things, isn't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And he'd actually taught me how to do it right before mm-hmm. caught himself on fire. And so I think that guided me towards the safety field.
Mm-hmm.
But I really believe my core and my passion from early age was more leadership and coaching. And so I took that role early mm-hmm. on, mm-hmm. right out of college, went to work for 3M
mm-hmm.
and learned. I mean, they were talking about culture before culture was even a buzzword.
Right. 3M and, really was a big innovator in that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I learned a lot of what good could look like, mm-hmm. right? And after I left there, everywhere I went, I was kind of the builder and fixer.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, I built and fixed a lot. You know? And what I noticed through my years with different organizations was I was starting to see trends mm-hmm. of things that we were doing over and over again. And it wasn't until I left BP and went to work for CH2M, which is now mm-hmm. Jacobs Engineering, mm-hmm. and I was a global health and safety practice leader. Mm-hmm. So I was really working with every single client with about their strategy and
wow.
their culture mm-hmm. across the globe. And so it went from one every 2 years to 10 a month,
mm-hmm.
where I was seeing the repetitiveness of the issues,
mm-hmm.
right? And it actually got quite depressing after a couple of years,
right.
because what I noticed was the biggest thing was we really don't educate our leaders to be leaders,
mm-hmm.
right? We're more managers
mm-hmm.
and from an early age, from school on. And so I really thought there was a need to share the learnings of the things that people do, you know, that organizations do mm-hmm. well and the leadership skills needed.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it just hit a wall. I just hit a wall, and I told my husband, I'm like, I just can't do this. I don't feel like I'm having a big enough impact.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much my moment, right? He said, well, then quit, you know, go ahead. And you've always wanted to write a book, do it.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am. So I quit and resigned and immediately started working on the book and realized it wasn't one book. It was going to be a whole series.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so much information.
Right. Well, you mentioned that there's a difference between managing and leading, but tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Yeah. A great example is I'm an awful manager. I do mm-hmm. task management. Okay. But I'm an awful manager of people. Not saying I'm great at it. I'm just a good observer and coach. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But managing is handling the detail day to day, getting things done. So in school, I mean, think early on, you know, we have to turn in homework.
Right.
We have to do tests. We have to follow the teacher's instructions. We have to walk in single file
mm-hmm.
all the way through college. You do your assignments now online, right? You do assignments, mm-hmm. you talk to people via text. It's very management. It's
mm-hmm.
Do.
Right.
And then leadership's kind of different, right? So leadership is more you inspire others. So I take the approach with leadership that I define my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
I educate folks on what my expectations are, right? I trust them to do that, if not do more.
And mm-hmm.
I love having folks that do way better than me because they make me look better, right?
Right.
And I can educate and inspire thousands. And then all I have to do is have touch points where I go out and assure and check on them and make mm-hmm. sure things are going good. And if they're not, then coach them to help them improve. Never right. with the negative, mm-hmm. right? You're awful. Mm-hmm. There is no awful. There's just need for improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And that's leadership. You're able to impact way more. You're fostering a culture where people want to do better to one, you know, make you proud because
mm-hmm.
you trust them, but two, because they want to do better. And mm-hmm. if you do it right, you actually can help foster more leaders who lead even more.
Right.
So it has more impact. We don't teach those skills. And honestly, for 15 years, I was more of a task manager,
mm-hmm.
right? Who wanted, I think I had a secret leader inside me, but just didn't exactly know how to do it because I hadn't been taught.
Mm-hmm.
How. And I actually had a leader with BP who stepped up. He actually stepped in and saved me. I was getting ready to resign after I had an awful confrontation with somebody
mm-hmm.
over an issue. And I just said, I can't put up with these people.
Right.
He said, no, I don't want you to go. He mm-hmm. said, I see your potential. You're mm-hmm. smart. You have a passion very few have. Mm-hmm. And he actually sent me to what was called Cantle coaching back in the day. Now it's Reich coaching
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
out in Scotland.
Mm.
And that was a week-long program. And there was world leaders in there with me.
Right.
The most amazing leadership training. I've been to all of them, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Being here, HR sends me to everything in the U.S. But I went through this and it broke down. So I understood my core mm-hmm. and who I was. It taught me how to understand others better.
Mm-hmm.
8 for 2 and back from that training and mm-hmm. my husband, another different person. That was my aha moment
right.
for leaders was, wow, we just don't do it right. There's mm-hmm. so much we need to do to for leaders. And there's so much learning that we hold in with those, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have little experiences, they're pain when we don't share them. Because
mm-hmm.
we want other people to feel pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think developing leaders to be better than what we have now involves mm-hmm. sharing learnings as well as developing education tools for those leaders.
Right. Yeah. And one of the things that I see is, you know, you mentioned, you know, people, you know, some people are just meant to be leaders and some people are meant to be managers. And that's, you know, not good or bad. I mean, the really good thing is when people recognize which ones they are supposed to be. I see a lot of people who are in a leadership role who still want to be the manager. You know, they maybe they work their way up. And so they still want to be that in the trenches, that, you know, micromanaging almost type of person. And maybe not so much, you know, quite so detailed, but they want to be more involved rather than leading the overall organization or, you know, department or whatever it is.
Yes. So I agree. But I think there's confusion there because the leaders who want to be involved in the trenches, especially the micromanagers, a lot of times just need that coaching to understand the destruction that they're causing with their approach.
Right.
They can still be in the trenches.
Mm-hmm.
They can still be out. I mean, in fact, I'd encourage that. I'm a leader that's always out there. You know, I've climbed wind towers 23 stories, sat up there without a bathroom for 8 hours, you know, and worked with the folks. So, you know, being in the trenches and being a leader totally go together. The problem comes when, again, those people haven't been educated or understand what actually being a leader means.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to take off that manager hat and be a leader while they're in the trenches. They get confused between the two. And I was, again, I was the same way before I went through that training. And I'm a certified coach with that program now. And I think it's amazing. It's life-changing to understand the difference between micromanaging and leading and inspiring. And and so even those folks who want to do it, it's not hard to shift, to understand the differences and get there to where you can be an inspiring leader and still be hands-on.
Right. Yeah. And you're right. I think the leader does need to be, hands-on, especially because they need to know what's going on. You know, I think where we see problems occur is when you've got the leaders in their ivory towers, or, you know, they're up on the, you know, the whatever floor and they never come down. So they don't understand what's actually going on.
Yes.
And, you know, and that really tends to be the problem, is they think they can't. Maybe is the best way to put it. You know, well, I shouldn't walk around. And I've shared this before with a couple of times on my program several years ago, actually many years ago now, it seems like. I worked for ING, the big financial company. And, you know, this was in Denver. I reported directly to the CEO, wonderful man. I really liked working with him, but he was, of course, on the top floor of the building and all the rest of us were down on other floors. Well, he decided, as suggested by HR or whatever, to start going to the various floors, which, you know, there were 16 floors, and start walking around and meeting people and saying hi. Well, he had never done that. And so that just immediately caused terror. What's he doing here?
Yes.
Why is he here?
What did we do wrong? Yeah.
You know, quick, hide. You know, and of course, it was cubicle world, so we only had the 5-foot walls. And so you could see that he was walking around. And so it was a fantastic concept. But and then once people got used to the fact that he really wasn't there to, you know, to see, you know, how was your cubicle decorated, or were you playing solitaire, or your computer, or, you know, chatting too much, or all those things. He really was just trying to get to know people. It worked. But it really was fascinating to kind of watch, because I was the head of communications, and so a lot of people came to me and said, "What's going on? Why is he here?" You know, and so it is tricky when the leader does, you know, especially if they have been off in their little ivory tower. So, of course, the important thing is to never get yourself there, to kind of always be that person that is walking the halls and seeing what's going on.
Right. Right. And you know, he must have had a good coach, because that's that exact same scenario has happened many times where the CEO is told to start walking, right? We hear about them. Okay, you got to do site tours, right? Once a week, you got to get out there. And they do turn into the police, right?
Mm-hmm.
The the uninspiring, they come out and they, what are you doing wrong? And mm-hmm. why is this? And why aren't you doing this?
Right.
And that'll kill the culture really mm-hmm. quickly. Mm-hmm. Like you said, fear. So he had some good coaching and, mm-hmm. and there is an art to observations and conversations when leaders go out, mm-hmm. you know, in their expectations, they should be looking to learn.
Right.
Right. From others. How mm-hmm. are things? What can we do better? You know, do you have any recommend? That's mm-hmm. what they should be looking for when they go out, not looking to
fire somebody.
Yeah. Not yeah. looking to find problems. It's, yeah. it's like a child. They say 5.9 mm-hmm. round up to 6 positives mm-hmm. for every 1 negative. Mm-hmm. And if you keep that in your mind, when you're out speaking to people, you don't want to focus on the negative. You want to focus on the positive. And what, you know, what issues, looking in the mirror, what are things I can do to make your world better?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's important.
Well, and of course, the important part of that, I almost said importantest.
I like it. Let's make
part of that. The most important part is the culture. You know, do people know that if somebody, the manager, the CEO, the whoever, asks for suggestions that they can give them without getting their head
right.
chopped off or worse, you know, right. lose their job. And so, you know, that I think that's we're talking today about culture killers.
Yes.
And so, you know, I alluded at the start of the program that, you know, it really starts at the ground up.
Yes.
And it truly is, you have to build that strong foundation. And that is the premise of your book. So let's kind of start from there. How does a company, you know, and it's tricky because, you know, a lot of my listeners are entrepreneurs and their company is their one person or, you know, maybe 2 or 3. But we also have listeners who, you know, have companies that they are a part of that, you know, is a huge organization that's been around for years. Let's talk about that foundation. You know, can, if we didn't start right, can we go back and fix it? You know, of course, what we really want to do is start right. You know, build that foundation right to start with so the house doesn't fall down on us. But what are the important things that we need to do to build that strong foundation?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And
there were like 8 in there at least.
Yeah, right? That's what I was saying. So for the smaller groups, I think this is critical. And mm-hmm. this gets missed a lot. I've done a lot of consulting for small organizations. And what I've found is they go under rapidly, mm-hmm. right? They'll struggle, they'll fold, they'll sell quickly. And a lot of times they'll reinvent themselves and they'll have the same issues.
Right.
Right. And the same issues. And they're blaming the people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I had one where we met and he said, yeah, we had a great company. We made all this money. We grew really quickly. And then, you know, it just fell apart, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I started again and, you know, this is going really great. But now I'm having issues with my people. The turnover mm-hmm. is high and people aren't doing what they're supposed to do. And I asked, I said, well, have you defined your expectations for success? Where is your mission, vision, values, all of this? And he just didn't have them.
Right.
And I said, you know, I'd be happy to come in and do a culture assessment and really see where are the issues. Is it the people or is it the fact that as a small organization, you kind of said, I know what I need to do and what I need. And I start hiring people, telling them what to do, again, managing, right? Mm-hmm. And you build, what you're basically doing is building your organization or imagine a skyscraper, right? Mm-hmm. And you're starting with the first level and you're building it on quicksand.
Mm-hmm.
And it may,
it's going to shift and move and eek.
Yeah, you may be able to build it and mm-hmm. staff it and all that on top of this quicksand. You got to keep going faster and faster and faster because your building's sinking.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to do more and more faster without thought. And sooner or later, it's going to go under because
mm-hmm.
you didn't properly plan.
Mm-hmm.
And planning, like building a building, you got to pick a site that's not quicksand.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, really somewhere.
Don't start there.
Yeah, not on the edge of a cliff where, mm-hmm. you know. And then once you actually do your planning and see what you want and define success, what success is going to look like, then you have to set up your expectations. Which mm-hmm. is your foundation, right? Your expectations. What do you expect folks to do to get you to success?
Mm-hmm.
What are those expectations?
Right.
And I, in my book, I define that that foundation for success is OPALs. I've worked for a lot of organizations that have operating management systems, mm-hmm. infrastructure management systems, or HR management systems, or mm-hmm. safety management. They have all these different systems. But in honesty, you need one system. Anywhere mm-hmm. you have multiple different system management systems, you have potential for error when there's cross sections. Right. So the OPALs is their operating and performance all inclusive. It's a whole organization leadership system. Mm-hmm. And what that does is takes all of the basic things an organization needs to start. Not one of the, like a BP, they had hundreds, right? Mm-hmm. This is the real basic things you need to define mm-hmm. to build a strong, start building a strong foundation. Mm-hmm. And so going to another of your questions, right? If you take this OPALs gap assessment, which will be available after the book's launch on the 19th mm-hmm. online, the real mm-hmm. basic one, if you take that and just go through it as a new organization, it'll help you get started, right? Mm-hmm. As an existing organization, you can go, whoa, we haven't done that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's a gap.
Stop. Back
right?
up.
Mm-hmm. Right. So there are ways to fix it. Mm-hmm. It's harder once you're already going, right? Because mm-hmm. you've already kind of ingrained everything in your culture and you're going to have to fix it, which mm-hmm. is more difficult, but it can be done. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I recommend is wherever you're at, stop, mm-hmm. read the book, look at the OPALs checklist, and just go through and see where you are. Do a help. Right. You know, if you're really bad off, I do have OPALs assessors mm-hmm. who will come out and do gap assessments mm-hmm. and culture assessments and mm-hmm. also help you develop your strong foundation mm-hmm. and coach your folks on how to implement it. Mm-hmm. I don't believe third parties should implement things for organizations. I believe right. that should be done by the leadership.
Mm-hmm. So, it never sticks if a third party does it.
No, it doesn't. It's great to have a third party assess, mm-hmm. especially if you already have a broken culture, mm-hmm. because they'll come in as impartial and they'll get more honesty. Mm-hmm. But going forward, even that, the leadership should step in and start doing that on a more consistent basis. So
right.
we encourage leadership to participate with us in the mm-hmm. culture assessment so they get the visibility and they mm-hmm. also learn how to have that engagement.
Right. And of course, this kind of goes without saying, but we have to say it. The leaders, you know, and it doesn't matter if it's the CEO of the company or, you know, maybe it's a volunteer organization, whatever it is, if they're not 100% committed to this, it's not going to work.
No.
And
no,
we've seen that all happen, right? Where, you know, a department went, "Ooh, let's do this." And it gets going really well. Well, you know, it gets derailed because the leadership doesn't understand it, doesn't buy into it, won't fund it, you know, if it takes money, you know, things like that. And so if you don't have it, obviously from the top down, from the very start, it's not going to happen. You know, and it's funny because we're talking about building from the ground up, and maybe we need to say those leadership, they're the foundation.
That's exactly what I say in my book is we're flipping the script, y'all. Mm-hmm. Leadership, we build from the ground up. You mm-hmm. need to stop saying from the top down because they're not the top. The mm-hmm. people that perform the work mm-hmm. and deliver success, your culture of success, are your workers. They mm-hmm. are the top.
Right.
They are the top. You mm-hmm. are the foundation. Mm-hmm. Leaders are the foundation. And they define that foundation and they determine if the organization sinks or swims.
Mm-hmm.
And right. need to stop at blaming the top. The mm-hmm. top's up there just delivering what they're told to deliver. Mm-hmm. If they mess up, it's usually a system issue from the foundation. You can
right.
track it all the way back down. Talk about root cause. You know, it could be actually below the foundation mm-hmm. and what type of where did they build upon?
Right. Back to the quicksand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a ground up and in the book also, it's interesting. You mentioned the foundation, but I also have, it took me a while to figure out how to define this, but the concrete barrier is real.
Right.
And that goes back to you're sitting in the ivory tower, mm-hmm. the concrete barriers, when you define your foundation and you have your leadership thinking they're at top,
mm-hmm.
right? But they're really at the foundation, mm-hmm. and they build this concrete barrier that limits the communication of the expectations to the delivery mechanisms, the people.
Right.
And so they basically block their path of success, preventing their organization from having a culture of success. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways, like you said, if I go out and bark orders, I have fear, right? And people aren't going to tell me what's wrong.
Right.
Because they're going to fear that. So that's one of them, right? Mm-hmm. If when people tell me I come down on them as a leader, then there's fear that goes into that concrete barrier. And there's also incentives. Mm-hmm. So we incentivize people to lie.
Wells Fargo.
Right? So when we incentivize people on lagging indicators, things that have already happened, they can manipulate how that data looks, or they can be very creative in how they put the data in.
Right.
Right. So we incentivize people to lie. They either have, you know, fear, or the third one goes back to in the ivory tower as well. We just don't listen. We don't ask. We don't listen. We don't support. So like the culture assessments, I had one where a senior leadership brought me in. We did some amazing culture assessments and found some amazing data. But when it came, push came to shove, and we sat down with them, they walked out of the room to get a phone call. They just wanted to pay to say they did it.
Oh, yeah. So they could tell their employees, we tried. We tried. Yeah.
But when it came back to all the issues, almost, I'd say 95% of the root causes came back to leadership issues. They didn't want to hear it.
No, because they didn't want to admit they had been making mistakes.
Right. And that goes into why I chose the direction I did for the book series. I originally was going to write these books for existing leaders, because again, I'd been banging my head against the wall and I was just not feeling like I was making an impact. And I interviewed over 100 senior leaders, global leaders, government officials that I can't mention because they're not allowed to talk to me.
Right, right.
Yeah,
you have to kill us all.
So, you know, and in one of the discussions, this is how impactful people can be if you listen, right? In one of the discussions, we were chatting, and it was a senior leader, and he was a millennial that worked his way up in a large organization.
Wow.
Yeah. And it took me a little while to pick up on that, right? Because I don't ask what your age when I reach out to do an interview. And I'm like, are you a millennial? And he's, yeah, I am. And he was having all these frustrations. Oh my gosh, I want to hear more. You know, I want to learn more. And as he got to talking, he's like, we are your market. He's like, we are coming into the workforce with high expectations and not a lot of tolerance for ignorance. Or mistreatment. And he's like, but the problem is when we come in, we're immediately being taught the wrong ways, the old school ways. And so as much as you're trying to influence the existing leaders, you've got a whole group of like 50% of the workforce coming in here that are getting tainted by the deadly practices and these poor approaches. And he said, why don't you try to help us before we get in here and get broke? And it was just an epiphany. It was like, oh my gosh, that's who this book series is for. You know, it's for the new leaders to share the learnings, help them develop the leadership. That's the speaking I do is a lot more lead beyond best. It's a lot more geared to the millennials and the newer leaders, because it's giving them those leadership tools that they didn't get and they're not going to get in school because we don't do it.
Right.
And so that, you know, my book instantly, it was like, oh, I was at a writer's block and it just broke open, and I put more pictures and made big font and made them short, you know, 100 pages, so that's easy to read for the newer generation. And it just took off. And hey, the older generation that's been reading it, say thank you for making the big font, because we don't need trifocals.
I don't have to hold it, you know, but feet away.
Yeah, and I can read it on an airplane, and it's very, you know, very simple to understand with great takeaways. So. Yeah, I think that that individual is, I'm in, forever indebted
right.
to helping me.
Well, and they will be, you know, if they're not on that leadership track now, they will be.
Exactly.
And, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, the millennials are 50% of the workforce. So it just kind of, if you're doing your math or, you know, and they will be taking over,
yes.
you know, and, you know, obviously some of the companies, you know, who knows how many won't exist just because, you know, things like that happen. I mean, you know, I saw on the news just yesterday that JCPenney, one of those, you know, companies that's been around for a bazillion years, is closing more stores. Victoria's Secret now, you know, it's closing more stores. You know, all the, as the things change and things shift, and you know, and but at the same point, a leader is a leader, and you know, and it's it, maybe you're leading a different type of organization, so online as opposed to retail yes. or something like that. But it's still the same concepts.
Yes, yeah. Now lead, and even that, any department.
Mm-hmm.
We you know, you can have leaders.
Mm-hmm.
If you have people reporting to you, are you going to be a leader, inspiring them to be better
mm-hmm.
and help you grow better? Or are you going to be a manager who just
right.
tells people what to do and gets the job done and
mm-hmm.
doesn't inspire folks to be innovative and we just
mm-hmm.
stay where we are or continue to get worse?
Right.
So leadership is not, I mean, you could be a leader at school. You
mm-hmm.
could be a leader at church.
Mm-hmm.
A leader in your community.
Right.
Just,
well, and you mentioned, you know, we're talking about managers. Typically, you will have leaders who work for managers. You know, say it's, you know, the communications department. You know, we had the leader, the director of communications, but we had like the manager who was the director of communications.
Yes.
They had that title. But then in there, you had a leader. You know, who kind of, and it was, it's always interesting to watch those type of processes go through. And that may be where the millennials are really coming in, because they're those leaders or leadership qualities who are reporting to the managers. And so are the managers encouraging them or saying, no, you have to follow the rules.
Yeah. And the millennials still are management. You're
right.
Not getting much.
Oh,
leader,
yeah. And that's,
but
yeah,
they have the potential still,
mm-hmm,
right, to
right.
develop
mm-hmm.
those leadership skills.
Mm-hmm.
And the managers, directors, et cetera, in those roles, it's very, what you're seeing is they don't understand when any employee they get, I guess just going back to your point, any employee they get that has leadership potential,
mm-hmm.
they misunderstand what that is.
Right. They want
right.
my job.
Well, not, yes, they'll
mm-hmm.
be threatened by it. Why are
mm-hmm.
they trying to do better? But the other thing is they go, they don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do, they're not sitting here making this person do this, or they're not doing enough. And,
right.
and I know this from experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
The one confrontation I had that I mentioned earlier was a manager
mm-hmm.
getting in my face saying, you don't do anything. Why aren't you out in the field every day watching
mm-hmm.
those guys work, telling them when they're doing stuff wrong? And I'm like, well, we have field supervisors.
Right.
They
don't need that.
Mm-hmm. I educate them on what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I trust that they're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they do. And they bring me issues if they happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just spot check every once in a while. I don't
mm-hmm.
have to be. I have other things to be working on. I'm inspiring
right.
and working and leading an entire organization.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be out watching this crew of 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good use of my time. But that mm-hmm. manager didn't understand that.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not working.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not out there watching those 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
He just couldn't grasp the concept of leadership versus management. And I think
right.
that's part of the issue right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is that even in existing organizations with non-millennials,
mm-hmm.
our managers don't understand what a leader really is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It goes right back to that education and competency and our desperate need for more, you know, leadership tools. When I was interviewing folks over and over, you know, I sent them out the book concept, what I was working on, why I wanted to speak to them over and over. They were like, I can't believe this doesn't exist already.
Mm-hmm.
How does this not exist already? I read hundreds of books and I went back and confirmed there's nothing like this.
Mm-hmm.
How have we missed this? And
right.
it really comes back again to the ego.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at leadership books, they're all about we did this study and we found this and you do this. This is not that. This is, hey, here's everybody's learnings. Here's where we've screwed up. Here's things we can do to improve.
Right.
Not this is going to make you best, but these are things you need to be attentive to. So it takes a lot of humbleness to admit everywhere we've screwed up or messed up, sorry. And that's, I think, why it just doesn't exist yet.
Well, you know, let's talk a little bit more about the book, because one of the biggest premises of the book was expectations. And that we're not doing them correctly. We either don't define them right, we don't make them clear, or we don't have to turn the page, or they're unbalanced. We just don't do that. And it was funny because as I was reading this, I was thinking, oh my gosh, that is so true. You mentioned mission statement. You know, a lot of times companies will have this pithy mission statement. We're going to make the world a better place.
Yes, right.
Right? Yeah. And but they don't say how. Or what, you know, and so then as you're going through and talking to people, they're not meeting expectations because they didn't know what those expectations were.
Exactly.
You know, whether it's that, you know, you're, and that's where being specific is what people have to do, you know, and we kind of had this whole long thing for years where it was, we're going to empower our employees to do what they think is best.
Yes.
Well, okay, that's good in concept, but what I think is best is probably very different from what you think is best. You know, it might be a better product, it might be better customer service, might be more money, you know, all these various things. So then you end up with things not getting done. Because, you know, if I think having a better product is the best thing and you think making money is the best thing, those two might not fit together. And so that's where we really, really have to manage expectations. So talk more about that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why I started the book series with Deadly Expectations. And it's so important. It's not about getting down to the detail. So it's more about defining what's needed to get you to success, sustainable success, defining that, but defining it in a way that's as simple as possible and flexible enough that you still have ownership without detracting from where you need to get to. Right. So you still want people to have ownership, but you don't want to give them full rein.
Right.
And I've seen that, right? Oh, we're decentralized. Everybody can do whatever they want. Oh my gosh, talk about a hot legal mess. Right?
Oh yeah.
Right. And then the other route is they get too many engineers and smart folks in the room and they make it overcomplicated. So if I have to read a 500-page book to know how to turn on a light switch, I'm probably going to miss something somewhere on how I'm supposed to turn that light switch on.
Right.
Not going to do it exactly right. So keeping it simple is very important. So I always say simplify and standardize wherever possible with flexibility for folks to still feel ownership. Right.
Right. Well, and we don't want to make it too simple. I work with people on developing social media policies for their companies. And it's always funny because, and I tell them, you need that, you know, you need that in your company, whether you're using social media or not, your employees are. And I've seen a social media policy that was literally 33 pages long.
Right.
In other words, the attorneys got a hold of it.
Right.
To one that said, be an adult. Okay,
no.
That's not
I mean, exactly simple, and not so too simple, right?
Yeah, yeah. You got to find kind of the happy medium in there of telling people how to be an adult without doing it in 33 pages.
Exactly, exactly. So that's part of that simplification, right? You want to simplify it, but still get the meaning across. Still have what's defined and what your expectations are, and the big kicker is incentivized based on the leading indicators. So you've got to understand the risks to understand what things need to be done to drive your performance. So that's that's really important in that factor when you're defining your expectations, right? If I mm-hmm. define my expectations and they don't take consideration for the risks mm-hmm. and what leading indicators and what leading things we need to do to lead that success, then we're even if it's, even if it is only 5 pages mm-hmm. or 30 pages, it's a bunch of garbled. Mm-hmm. It's no good. It's right. not adding value.
Well, we've and nobody reads it. That's what it comes down yeah. to is, you know, you've got your two or three overachievers that will read it and memorize it. And everybody else puts it on the shelf. And you mentioned this in the book, you know, big companies have those rooms of the binders.
They've got fire requirements under process safety management. So those rooms have to have sprinklers.
Or the marketing plan that somebody uh-huh. came up with that's in the fancy binder, and it's on the top shelf because you don't want to look at it. You certainly don't want it at eye level because and if it's way up there, you don't notice that it's all dusty. You know, all of those things that we develop, mm-hmm. we don't follow because either A, it wasn't bought in by, you know, some, like you said, some consultant came in and said, here, this is the best way to do it. Or it was too, mm-hmm. it was too much of something.
Yes. Yeah. And interesting, I worked for an organization, I'm not going to say a name here, but they had a management system that mm-hmm. they had simplified. It was great, mm-hmm. right? From corporate, they had simplified it and basically said what at every site we needed to do. The mm-hmm. problem was when they sent their ideas, oh, we simplified it. Here it is. Here's this 10-page document that tells you what you have to do. Mm-hmm. But every single bullet on it had a huge undertaking to define the how. Mm-hmm. They were leaving the hows up to the sites. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was every single site defined that how differently. Mm-hmm. One might only have 5 bullets. One would have, you know, a 5 to 10 page thing, and one would have a binder. Mm-hmm. Right. And so what I did was I went through all of those requirements and I defined the how in a simple way that would apply to everybody across the organization. Right. Mm-hmm. But it still got the job done. Mm-hmm. And I put it all in one binder. I had to buy a 9-inch binder. Do you know how hard those are to find?
I didn't even know you could. Holy cow.
I know, right? So I get this 9-inch binder and I put them all in. And there's tabs where I still have stuff that hasn't been developed. Mm-hmm. And the corporate folks, you know, they come in like once a month. And they came in and I put it on the desk. And I said, here is your management system. Mm-hmm. You know, if you define the house mm-hmm. to them, they had that concrete barrier again. Right. They had thought that mm-hmm. that short document.
Yes, but we've already done it.
Well, that's it. Why is this mm-hmm. so hard? Mm-hmm. Right. They had thought that management system document, mm-hmm. whatever it was, 5 pages, 10 pages, whatever it was, they had thought that was it. And everybody should be able to do that easily. Mm-hmm. Why was it so hard? And when I came in and showed them, okay, here is what it really is. This is just bullets telling us we have to define all of this. So think of how many people you have to hire and pay mm-hmm. at every site to define this. Mm-hmm. And the chance for differences between this. So going back to your, it's not simple as in, you know, treat everybody nicely. It mm-hmm. requires some effort. Mm-hmm. But at the same point, why should I be building this 9-inch binder of valuable stuff here? Mm-hmm. This is the simple from your too simple.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is the house. You mm-hmm. need the house. This is mm-hmm. where everybody's missing. Senior mm-hmm. leadership gets the consultants in, they build the 10-page thing and say, here it is, but the house missing. Mm-hmm. And that's where they have a lot of disconnect. So I said, here's the house. This is what you need at the corporate level. It's got enough flexibility in these house mm-hmm. that they'll apply to everybody in the organization. Mm-hmm. But at least it makes sure they're all on the same path towards your expectations for success.
Right.
You can't just define the management system and then tell everybody to go figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You've got to define the how, and the how is not short, but mm-hmm. it is needs to be simple enough that I can then take that and condense it into training programs mm-hmm. and into assurance programs so I can educate my people on my expectations. They have the backup data of the hows there if they want to read it for more information. And then I can put assurance programs, not audits. Audits have to die. Mm-hmm. I won't be quoted on that. Quote me. Because audits are probably one of the most negative culture killing things out there.
Right. We're looking for what you're doing wrong. That's what an audit is.
I want to smack government. Mm-hmm. I want to say, stop it. Mm-hmm. Stop doing audits. Start doing gap assessments and working with the employers to be better. Do we want the U.S. and other countries to rise above and be great leaders and work together in harmony? Then we mm-hmm. need to stop fault finding. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can do that as long as you define your expectations. Mm-hmm. Those hows are included in it. Mm-hmm. Don't let others write your hows. Define your hows.
Right. Sorry. Yeah, it was funny. I just had this. I had this flashing thought when you were talking about the 9-inch binder that it really does, you know, my thought on this, and this is just kind of silly, it needs to be something like a binder because it needs to be able to change. You need to be able to take out that page because things change. I mean, right? You know, you used to go down to Office Max to buy your office supplies, and now you order online from Amazon. Mm-hmm. But somewhere in there, that might be part of how you're doing it. You know, obviously, an even greater thing is technology. You know, right. As technology changes, your how has to change. And I think that's where we've seen companies fail is, you know, a lot of times they don't change with either the technology, you know, or they just don't change with how everything else is changing. You know, one easy thing, Uber versus taxi, hotels versus Airbnb. I mean, you know, things are changing. And if companies don't adapt to that, and it doesn't matter if you're the little one person guy. I mean, you know, if you used to go in and say, you know, you went in and you did computer repair. And now people can figure it out online on YouTube. Well, you know, there's maybe you need to be one doing the YouTube videos. Right. We have to adapt. And so, you know, yeah, it needs to be a binder that you can change, you know, kind of literally and figuratively.
Yeah. And so that's a good point. I want to make sure so before my safety people yell at me, but the binder was an ergonomic issue, first of all.
Right. So I can't heavy. Hold that.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend anybody go make a binder mm-hmm. physically. I did it just for effect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And as soon as it was printed, it was out of date, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the binder was really just for a visual. Mm-hmm. You know, it made a point. It's not this, it's this. And you need to understand what you're asking your people to do. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it is out of date already, and I just printed it yesterday. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And by doing that, that goes back to your information, you know, the document control. I can't tell you how many gap assessments I've done where every site in one organization I've gone to gives me different documents and they mm-hmm. pull them from their organization's website.
Right.
They're the exact same document, but there's like 15 different versions out there mm-hmm. because along with big data, we have big problems, mm-hmm. right? And we go and we use SharePoints and we stuff in, and if we don't have a control mechanism to make sure there's only one version, mm-hmm. It gets messy fast.
Right.
You got one over here doing one thing, one over here doing another thing, but they're both being told to do that because they pull them from different places on your website. Mm-hmm. So that's really important too, is to keep your information current, mm-hmm. to educate your people when there are changes. I recommend not changing things so frequently, mm-hmm. being more thoughtful with your changes. And maybe, you know, doing them on a regular basis, like once a year or once a
right.
quarter. Mm-hmm. So you're not constantly bombarding your folks with emails. Oh, this has changed. This has changed.
Right. Today we'll be doing it this way.
Oh my gosh. It's hard to keep up with.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and it's funny because there, again, it's like, you know, between the super simple and, you know, the really complicated, there's the we've always done it this way. So we're always going to continue doing it this way to, oh, we change it every day type of thing. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So you see, going back to the balance, why this is so important.
Mm-hmm.
It's finding that balance. And that's one reason I've developed, it's patent pending now, a tool that actually helps leaders and groups and teams consider balance when they're making their decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't do that. We think yes or no, black and white.
Right.
I mean, the balance that the Lady of Justice holds, right, is mm-hmm. the two-tray balance. And that's not how our world works.
Mm-hmm.
We are constantly shifting our balance. It's like a rotating circle, you know, and that's what I've done with the balance is I've made it a continuous loop balance
mm-hmm.
circle. So to where you can place considerations anywhere on that tray. I just made the three places for people, performance, and public. But you can imagine that. So anywhere where you put too much effort, right, it's going to cause that part of the balance to go down into too much focus. And wherever it's not balanced, those areas will go up into increased risk. So you've got to consider that. How do we approach our decisions in a more balanced way? And part of that is not throwing out something new every day. It's going to be very disruptive to your organization. It's potentially going to damage your culture and prevent you from being successful. So here you are trying to do good stuff and you're killing your company. We've got to stop doing that.
Well, and in your book, you talk about, you know, and we've mentioned it before, standardization. I mean, that helps keep that balance without just, you know, and again, we want to say, you know, we're not telling employees or volunteers or, you know, whoever it is, you can never do, you know, because we want them to be innovative. We want them to come to us. But where you can standardize, standardize. So they know, okay, this is what we have to do. You know, and I mean, some of it might be like HR policies. You know, you have to do a timesheet. You know, everybody has to do the timesheet. I mean, you know, there are things that obviously can be standardized, and it doesn't matter what your company is or what the size of the company is. You can standardize some things.
You can standardize everything, my dear. Everything. The trick is when you're standardizing everything, you can standardize an innovation.
Right. You build that in.
Yeah. You say, here's our innovation practice. And in order, you know, to innovate out of what we currently have.
Right.
For, you know, the you say the timekeeping. I mean, back in the day, we did hand time cards.
Right.
We've progressed from that. And then we can continue to improve. So have an innovation or a continuous improvement practice that actually explains for everything you've standardized, here is how we go about making it better.
Right. Well, and again, that's where you encourage the employees, because they're going to be the ones that say, you know what, I spend 15 minutes every day just doing my timesheet, you know, because I have to do it this long, drawn out way, yada, yada, yada. What if we had an online process that tracked me or, you know, something like that? I mean, there's certainly ways, again, because we have the leaders know that the people in the trenches are the people who truly know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. Some do.
Right.
Some do. Some don't admit it, right? They think they don't know anything. So, yeah, but that's as long as you have in there a way for folks to innovate and improve and get their voice heard, you can standardize everything.
Right. You know, and we mentioned that, you know, people have to know that they can say things. And so, you know, maybe if you haven't been allowing people to do this, maybe that, you know, you start with a suggestion box so people can anonymously say things, you know, but bring them into this slowly. But again, you have to value it. You know, I'm this huge Big Bang Theory fan. People who've listened to the program for a long time know that I love that. And one of my favorite episodes is when the president of the university goes to Sheldon and he tells him, you know, you have got to stop inundating my suggestion box with suggestions, because of course, you know, Sheldon obviously knows the best way to do everything. And so he's just continually putting in suggestions, you know, and then of course they're ignored, but he keeps trying. But you know, we do need to know that we can make those suggestions and they'll be heard. Now it might not be something that can be implemented, but then you need to be able to tell them why. You know, maybe it's cost. Yes. Maybe it's we don't have the manpower. All these various things. But, you know, if you heard the suggestion and, you know, thought about it, then tell people, okay, well, we can't do this because, but, you know, maybe we'll be able to do it in the future. You know, that's how we have people who now work from home and, you know, all these various things, because, you know, initially it was, you want to work from home. No, no. Well, then they saw that when people work from home, they actually, in many cases, well, hopefully in all cases, you know, that's the ultimate goal, are more productive. You know, but if not now, then maybe later is maybe a good thing.
And suggestion boxes, again, like to your point, you got to be careful with how you roll them out. If you just put one and have people put in it,
Right. And if you never empty the box, right, we've all seen the suggested boxes that never get emptied.
Yeah. But you have to have those expectations for the employees putting in it. So one thing I like to say is that's a leading indicator, right? So putting some type of incentive around making suggestions that actually make a positive impact for the organization. To your point, you still have to respond to it.
Right.
Brazil, I worked with an organization who they started collecting, you know, turn in your, you know, any observations or suggestions, and they were turning them in, and all they were doing was counting them.
Right. Oh, we got
they were turning
today.
In the number because the organization has set a goal to turn in a number. And so they were turning in
because they put in 30,
1,000, right? And, but in doing that, I said, are you actually looking at them? I mean, people are making suggestions. Are you doing anything? No, we're just counting them because we have to turn in a number. And I'm like, oh my gosh,
that's
so
really
there's
cool
an example.
Because, the people who got 1,000 went, yay, we got a party. And then they realized, wait a minute, nothing we suggested, you know, ever saw the light of day.
Yeah, no, but they were being told they had to turn something in. So if you looked at the details, this was the fun part. I said, let's pull these out and start looking at them. The stuff they were turning in was, there's a rock in my path, and it's on a gravel walkway. It's like they were turning in junk.
Oh, yeah.
To get the numbers and not quality. And so we talked about ways they could improve it. Like, this was one of those out there, not a lot of internet connection kind of places, right? And we were looking at Scantrons, right? So you have a little Scantron form that they can write their suggestion on, and they can sign saying, yes, I need follow-up. Or this is something, you know, because they couldn't use an app. And, you know, collect this, and then you're actually getting data. And if people are just saying, I saw this and fixed it, kudos, right? But if it's something to where I see something that needs to be fixed, they can check the box that says, fill in the circle, so that you get triggered to do something about it. And you can start tracking actual value versus just numbers. But again, they did it that way because the organic culture, the corporate set the expectation on the lagging indicator, the number turned in.
Right.
Not the leading indicator, the quality of what was being brought in and what was actually being acted on. If they would have set it on the leading indicator, imagine what would happen. How many of your suggestions and observations did you respond to it, and what was done for them, you know, and what was done about it, what impact did it have to help the organization?
Well, and when you force it, you know, it never works. You know, I've been parts of networking groups where we were forced to have a certain number of interactions with other members. Well, you know, all we did was we got together and had coffee. You know, there was nothing good in it. You know, all these various things. And again, like you said, you know, you might force it and get 1,000 and you're thinking, wow, but maybe one was what you needed. You know, and but that one either was in there and got lost in the shuffle or was never even suggested.
Right. Yeah. And then don't forget that making people turn in 10 a week, I've had this in a culture assessment too, creates not so happy workers.
Right.
Because they feel like they're being told to turn something in that doesn't add value. They then it loses all impact. They're not going to turn anything good into you, and they're not going to respect you when you ask for something.
And if they're really smart, they're just going to turn in the same stuff over and over again if they know you're not reading it.
Yep. And that's what they do. That's what they do. They turn in to get the numbers, and it culture killer. It prevents your opportunity to have a culture of success.
Well, and it ends up being what they're focusing on. You know, there's the big debate with schools. You know, are you teaching just for the tests? You know, and that's a totally different debate. But, is that what you're doing? You know, are you telling people that the most important thing is to fill out these forms? Then that's all they're going to focus on. You know, as opposed to, hey, you need to be doing your job. You need me. And so it's so important.
Yeah. And the teaching to the test, that's a big one for me. I have ADD, ADHD, IED, OCD, and growing up, you know, I'm not going to date myself, but growing up in the past, the teacher, we standardized testing got introduced late in my education as a pilot. And back then, with my issues, the teachers actually took the time to set aside and work with me. You know, you could call me a teacher's pet, but it really wasn't. It was them trying to help me.
Mm-hmm, right.
And
Which that's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, teach me the skills. So mm-hmm. I learned the skills to channel my energy, mm-hmm. to channel my brain that goes, a billion different ideas a minute. Mm-hmm. I learned those skills from my teachers, not my parents. My dad traveled for work. We mm-hmm. had four kids in the family. You know, I was lucky if my mom was, right. present. And mm-hmm. I was taught those by my teachers. And mm-hmm. nowadays, one of my sons has the same issues I do. And mm-hmm. I'm trying to help him, but mm-hmm. it's the third party thing, right? Our schools right. don't do that. Mm-hmm. In fact, I just get email after email about how awful, he's not mm-hmm. behaving. He's a disruption, da, 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 da,
And you're
medicate him. You need to medicate.
Yeah. And you're like, no,
nobody said medicate me.
No,
mm-hmm. But then when I bring up issues are things that my teachers did, like, okay, mm-hmm. I had this energy. So they'd had me take notes starting mm-hmm. in third grade. Of whatever the teacher was saying. I took mm-hmm. notes. Half of them were doodles, but no.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I tried to do that in our school here. I was told, no, that would be a distraction.
Right. Well,
more than he is now.
Yeah. And of course, the problem, and I don't have kids, so this is just all anecdotal, is the teachers don't have the resources, including time, to be able to give the attention that they should. And I mean, that's my soapbox is, we're not, we've got classroom sizes that are huge and all these various things.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but I don't think they're also being right. taught these skills.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they're taught to teach to the mm-hmm. test.
Yeah.
They're not taught to mm-hmm. actually lead and develop their people.
Right. Yeah. Which is the premise of this whole show.
Exactly. That's why when you hit it right at the end, I said, yay. Oh, we got to circle. There are countries
that are actually segue.
Revising their education system.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, at all levels, kindergarten through college. I mean, this is something that, and post-college, things like that. So, Tabitha, oh my gosh, this has been great. And I know that we'll have you on again because you are writing more books. So, we'll definitely be chatting with you again. But until then, how do people find you and connect with you online?
Yeah, so I'd love for everyone to visit my website. It's very easy, talaser.com. Mm-hmm. And they can actually join the journey I'm on. If you read the book, you'll understand more about the journey mm-hmm. To impact a more positive future. Mm-hmm. And just join up on the website and get the updates. And I'd love to hear from you as well, especially if you read the book. I'd love to hear feedback. It'll be valuable towards the next book.
Great.
The series. And there's about 40 of them. So,
hey,
perfect.
Mm-hmm. Well, what thought would you like to leave our listeners with?
I would just like to leave everybody with the thought that we all have the potential to impact positive change. Mm-hmm. We just have to look at what we have control over and what we have the ability to do. Stop looking to have others impact change, see what we can do and take that first step.
Perfect. I love it. And what a good way to end. So I am Deb Creer. I've been having a delightful conversation with Tabitha Laser. And until next time, everyone have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Business Power Hour, hosted by Deb Creer. Join us next time for more real life stories and techniques to power up your business.
You've been listening to C-Suite Radio. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.